Hey friends, welcome back to another Field and Garden podcast. It is your friend, Lisa Mason Ziegler, and thanks for dropping in. And today you're in for a treat, and I'm super excited to hear from our guests today. In this episode, we are going to kind of go down another exploration, friends, on some of these places that entrepreneurship can lead us from flowers to flowers, how it grows, the journey. And then there's that nasty word, pivoting our businesses, which we've heard so much in the last couple of years. So, you know, I don't know about you guys, but when I used to hear the word entrepreneurship, the things that would pop into my mind would be things like out of my reach, or a person would jump into my mind, someone who I would feel like I could never achieve that. And I always thought I could never, ever do that. And I just want to say, friends, the whole purpose of these talks that I'm having with these different entrepreneurs is to show you that we are people just like you. We never thought that we would be where we are today, 10 years ago. Am I right, guys?
That's right.
So, friends, I am honored today to have the dynamic couple, Daniel Shavey and Wesley Turner, who are business partners in crime. I mean, to tell you guys, when I went to like stalk you a little bit online, is it three separate businesses?
It's actually four separate businesses.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So there's one I don't even know about.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to kind of give the rundown, and then we're going to start letting you guys fill in all the gaps for us. So Daniel, as many of you, of my listeners, will know who you are, Daniel, the flower farmer and the brains behind Petal Pickers, which is a flower farm located in South Carolina. And he now ships his gorgeous stems nationwide. And y'all, if you don't watch his stories and his reels, I mean, it's like walking into fairyland, right? I mean, it's like a fairy tale. It is just so very, very beautiful. And then Wesley has the Nested Fig, which I believe is a warehouse shopping show business. And I think did that grow out of your local garden boutique shop called Roots?
Yeah, well, it actually grew out of our furniture and home decor store, Four Rooms, but that was one of the big pivots.
Oh, my goodness. So, friends, y'all are in for a treat, because I will tell you, from watching the lives and the reels and the stories, which are I look forward to every day, there's just so much beauty and flowers involved. So I just hope and I know that we're going to learn something from you guys. So first, and y'all decide who can go first, tell us kind of how all this got started. What festered this all up?
All right. Well, let's start with Wes telling a quick story, because he's the real entrepreneur between the two of us. I have learned a lot of what I know about growing my business and here at the farm from Wesley. But I'll start it off with when Wes was about 10 years old, he went to his mom and told her he wanted to buy a Coke vending machine for his garage.
Actually, I was gifted a Coke vending machine. I've been an entrepreneur. It actually goes back a little bit before that. Really quickly, what I used to do, I have two older brothers, and what I used to do is when I was little and we would go trick-or-treating, I would come back and I would take out the candy that I wanted to keep, and then I would put the other candy that I didn't really like that much in a bag. I would keep it hidden away for a couple of weeks, and then when their Halloween candy was gone, I would start selling it to them. I would make them pay me for the candy.
You still do that with our snacks here.
Basically. And so then, like Daniel mentioned, when I was about 9 or 10, I was gifted, I don't even know how, but a Coke machine. Someone was going to throw it away, and they said it worked. And I was like, I want that. So they gave it to me. And so then I put that on our back porch deck area, so that now the neighborhood friends, my brothers, everyone who came over had to buy their coats from me. So I used to sit down every Sunday, you know, when the paper came out and all the deals were in the paper, I would sit down, I would go through who had the cases of Coke products or whatever on sale that week. You know, back then they would say like limit two cases here and limit two cases there, because you could, and I would figure out where I could get the best prices, and I would make my mom drive me around to the different grocery stores to get the Cokes.
And we that's how we started our businesses, using the same concept.
Yes, basically.
Yeah.
You know, what a generous mother you must have had. A, she let you put that machine on her back porch.
Right.
And then she drove you around. I mean, I think your mom gets the star for sure.
Right. Yes. My mom has definitely always been supportive in whatever business endeavor sort of thing. She's like, yeah, why not? And so after that, it kind of went on. I fell in love with retail. My grandmother had a Merrill Norman cosmetic studio makeup.
Yep.
And she was adding or had like a gift area in there as well. So for whatever reason, I guess they had conferences for the Merrill Norman brand. And so one time right out of, I think it was my senior year in high school, right before college, my mom and I went with her because it was in Atlanta. We're like, that'd be a fun trip. Just for a weekend. And part of that included going to the Atlanta market. And when I walked in and I saw that you could buy all of these items at wholesale and resell them to people, I had died and gone to heaven. So I was like, this is my place. This is my place to be.
It's truly an experience going to market. And I've been going now with Wes for like 10 years, and you can buy almost anything home decor, gift, or related. And that's, you know, with that knowledge is how we started our first business. So,
yeah.
And so tell me how that happened. I mean, what was the first business and how did it kind of roll into this? I mean, from those of us, I will tell you, I have such an appreciation now. People say things to me about the people that are looking from the outside at what I do or what you do. It looks so dreamy and wonderful. And it is. I'm not saying it's not, but we know that there is like a spider web behind the scenes, right? So I just want to say what you guys are doing is it's really inspiring. It's really inspiring to me. And I appreciate it so much. So tell us how that kind of all rolled out.
Well, let's set the scene. So when I guess you were in, you had just graduated high school, and then Wesley started a small garden boutique in his hometown and ran that for a little bit. He went to Mississippi State for horticulture, funny enough. And while he was there, he started another small business in the town in Mississippi and ran that. And so he moved around, graduated college, ended up in Greenville, and then you were working at a garden center here in Greenville.
I was the manager of a local garden center here, but I always knew like I want to have my own place or whatever sort of thing, my own store. Mm-hmm. Just from doing all of that. So then we met in
2009 or 2008.
We met in 2008, which as everyone can remember, if you were old enough, that was the worst time for businesses. And
I was just graduating. I had just graduated college. So I'm a few years younger than Wes. And it was hard to find a job in 2008 with my degree. I also didn't really have a clear direction on where I wanted to go. And so I was working a job at a clothing store. And then Wes was working at the garden center while we were dating, and Wes was like, I think I'm ready to start my own business. Or, you know, do you want to help? And I was like, yeah, let me get out of this place and let's go. Let's do this together. I just felt really inspired by his drive and passion. I could, right when I met him, I knew there was something different about Wesley that really intrigued me. And I was really attracted to your drive, I guess, from the first time we met.
I think that I agree with you, Daniel. And I can feel that that inspiration of it's like, golly day, he makes it so easy. I totally get what people say to me now. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you make it look so easy, Lisa. And I'm like, it is not easy.
Right.
But because we love it, Wes, that's what it is. It's just like, it's in our blood. It's in our veins to do. I mean, it's not even so much selling as it is making people happy, helping people. And just, yeah. So I totally get it, Daniel. I agree. I got you too, Wes.
Thank you. So that's when we decided to open Roots, which is our original of our adult stores now, the four businesses, Roots. And we were in the situation, I was managing a garden center and I think I was like 28 or whatever. And I was like, I want to do my own thing. Doesn't matter how old you are. If you are 70 and you want to start a business, do it, go for it. But we weren't settled in. So I was like, we hadn't climbed any ladders. We hadn't started making large income or anything like that. So it felt right for us at the time because we didn't, if it failed, we weren't falling very far. You know what I'm saying? So we decided to open Roots. And I will say, when the economy is down, that's also a very good time to start a business because the ride up is a lot easier. And we found, I was 28. Looking back, I'm like, who rented us retail space? I was 28.
I was 23.
23.
And we had all the power in our court. So we negotiated down to a 1-year lease because if it didn't work, then we needed to get out and we had no money to continue it. But
and in commercial real estate, a 1-year lease is like,
it's unheard of.
They will not do, like today you could not go find a 1-year lease anywhere.
Yeah.
But they were willing to do that just to have the space filled. And then even going to market like with vendors, usually there's large minimums or buy-ins or whatever. They just wanted business as well. So us being broke, we were able to talk to vendors and they would sell us what we wanted. So we were able to buy, smaller quantities from a wider variety of vendors to have our offerings. But also we live 2 hours from Atlanta where the big market is for this type of thing. And we would drive there like every week before our store opened and we would walk all the floors and look for samples, when they're trading out,
we would run.
Yeah. We would run because it's like 20 floors and we're like, okay, we got 2 hours to get through these floors. And we would just make our rounds every week, picking up sample items.
They were discounted.
Bargains.
So discounted wholesale. So we were making a lot of money off of those items.
Yeah. So we were able to mark those up and make a lot of money, a higher margin on those items. So that's where we started. And we really marketed the business because it was a down economy off of doing potted arrangements. So we focused on houseplants and then potted arrangements, orchids, that sort of thing. And we marketed it as if you've been used to having cut flowers, well, now you can get a potted arrangement. And even if you do not know how to take care of a houseplant, it's going to last you way longer than a cut flower.
Right. So Good point.
That's how we started our business. And our slogan was, our arrangements have roots. And our business name was Roots.
Yeah.
Oh.
And I do just want to point out, we started with nothing. And in fact, Wes's grandmother reached out and said, I know you're starting this business. I will go ahead and give you a $10,000. Like, this is what I would give you after I pass. So if you want it now to help start your business. So we had $10,000. And then I think your mom
contributed
to that as well. But so that is where we started.
Like $20,000.
So y'all bootstrapped. Y'all bootstrapped. Right.
Yes.
You
know? Yes. And we started out, and to those who are starting and you're in that kind of element, the thing that you have to do is you have to step outside of your body and picture the business that you want. You can't focus on the emotions that you feel or where you are in that place in time. You feel broke. You feel like, how's this going to work? But you can't present it in that way. You have to present it or view it how the customer's going to walk in. So you want to, you know, present yourself in that manner.
Almost like fake it till you make it.
Yes.
And by always just presenting yourself bigger than you actually are, it's going to keep you like out of your comfort zone.
Right.
Because if you're comfortable in your business, then you're not growing your business. And you just always, we to this day still feel like, do we have everything in place? Or is this the right decision that we're making? And when you're planning ahead, it still feels cloudy. Things fall into place and you make good decisions, but that uncomfortable feeling has never gone away as we continue to grow our businesses.
You know what, Daniel, it's so funny you should say that. You know what I just wrote down when Wes was talking a minute ago? That you have to be comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Absolutely.
To be an entrepreneur and being, I heard somebody say this the other day. I had dinner, as a matter of fact, with two of Steve's cousins, couples, and they are incredibly successful entrepreneurs and just huge successful business people. And it just humbled my heart to sit at that dinner table and they feel exactly the same way we do.
Right.
You know what I mean? Their businesses are in the B's. And you know what I mean? It's like they're still facing that quivery feeling inside. Like you get at market probably buying tons of stuff.
Right,
and
right.
Daniel, when he's ordering 5 million bulbs in, or what, you know, what ridiculous number he has to order now. I think that we could say that over and over and over again. It's being uncomfortable. You have to get comfortable feeling uncomfortable. That's the way it is. You know, isn't it kind of like loving somebody, man? You got to lay it all out there. And if you're not willing, my dad used to say, golly, girl, you keep stretching your neck across that chopping block. And it's like, I kind of like it. You know, I mean, that's kind of what makes us what we are. Anyway, sorry, keep going.
Yeah, and that definitely, I think that is one thing, a tip in growing your business is you got to be uncomfortable. Because if you're comfortable, then you are not growing. And then also, it even goes to your inventory, whether, like for me, that could be furniture, home decor, it could be indoor plants. For Daniel, that can be, like you said, bulbs or seeds or whatever. One of the things that I've, you know, looked back and it sometimes hindered my own business was not, you know, stepping out and buying, increasing my inventory numbers.
Yes.
Because I was like, oh no. Like we used to say, okay, January is going to be slow. It's after the holidays. January is going to be a slow month. And we would let our retail stores, the inventory get really, really low.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're not going to really have those people anyway, whatever. By accident, in the last couple of years, we have gone into January with really high inventory, basically beating the supply chain. Last couple of years, we've ordered like way out so that we wouldn't get caught with the supply chain issues. That made our Januaries have very high inventory, and we had incredibly high sales in those months. So, it's one of those things, again, that goes back to being uncomfortable. You got to push that envelope, that one step, that one, order a few more seeds, order a few more bulbs than you think you would have or whatever. Because if you don't have it, you can't sell it.
And that's happened too from us, you know, taking a few stumbles along the way and, you know, getting caught with no furniture on the sales floor or no large pieces of furniture in our furniture store or running out of a certain plant that is a staple plant, or, you know, it'd be like a florist running out of greenery for the week when they're trying to get all their arrangements done. It's happened to us almost every situation we've gotten through and stumbled through, but you just can't focus on that fear of failing. You really just have to kind of set yourself up for success and kind of focus on what it's going to take to succeed.
You know, it's so funny you should say that. That it would be like me running out of soil blockers,
right,
which has happened.
Right.
And we have the largest order of soil blockers, you know, on a slow ship from England right now. I mean, it's so many. I lay in bed at night and think, oh my gosh, do you think we'll sell them all?
Right.
You know, I mean, it's like I know we will.
Right.
But it's those little creepy question marks that climb around on you when you get that doubt, right?
Right.
And then, I mean, I'm just so, you're, and you guys, I'm sure, are the same way. I'm just so grateful. I'll mention it at the breakfast table. And Steve will say, so if you don't sell them, we'll figure it out. Don't worry right. about it.
Right.
You know, right? I mean, exactly. What's the worst? All right. So you got Roots.
Yep. So that started in 2009. So we started Roots. We did the plants, indoor plants.
Right.
We didn't start with cut flowers at the time. That came later. But we would mix in a little bit of home decor, some gifty items, some lamps, that sort of thing in there. So as the business grew for Roots and the plants, people were also wanting more of that home decor sort of thing. And we were in a smaller shop. So in 2013, I was like, let's open a second store. So, So that's when we opened Four Rooms, which is our furniture and home decor store.
And we, you know, you opened that up in a smaller building, a smaller space.
Oh,
and
yeah.
How long were you in that space with the furniture store? Just 1 year?
One and a half years.
And in 1.5 years, that business took off so much, we had to move it into a larger space. So not only did we open a new store, but then we had to redo the entire thing by opening a larger store shortly
wow.
after that. And we've actually done that with Roots as well. We had, as the business grew, we had to expand into the space next door to us when it came available. And we had to redo everything then too. So
yeah, we're good at moving and redoing businesses, but we started out small with what we could do. You outgrow it, but then don't be afraid to move if that's what you need to do.
And that's what it's made. I mean, that's the point, right?
Right.
To keep fluid. I mean, we bought a warehouse and within 6 months, within 6 months, I knew that we were going to outgrow it. It's like, oh my gosh. So then you buy something bigger. And the hope is that, you know, 2 years later, you'll say, we need another one, you know?
Right.
That is this path. And so that is so totally awesome. All right, keep going. This is so interesting.
So then we had the furniture home decor store. And then in somewhere after that,
like 2019, So we decided to buy a farm. Wes grew up in the country. He always loved animals. He wanted some space. And, you know, our businesses are in a neighborhood community within our city. So it was getting to the point that every time we would go to the grocery store, out to dinner, and everyone wants to say, hey, or ask, they know us as the plant guys and the furniture people. So we're, you know, trying to eat dinner at a grocery shop and they're asking us about, why did their fiddle leaf fig die? And so we just wanted to get out of the city a little bit.
Which we love our customers
we
appreciate. But, you know, we wanted that kind of like separation, not just from that, but from the businesses in general.
Because
when we lived there, we were just literally like,
we basically lived in the stores.
Yeah.
And we would go home to go sleep at night. So that's true. Like, just to be able to have that separation of personal life and business. And it still never happens, but it's now a physical boundary.
until the flower
until
farm.
You started a flower
until
farm.
We started a flower farm, and that went down the drain. But that was the thinking, like, we'll be out, we'll have this separation, because we lived just a few blocks from the store, so it was very easy to go home and then be like, I just need to go back and finish this one thing or whatever. So that's when we bought the farm in 2016.
Yep. And so we were actually, because we had our plant boutique, and I had dabbled in our backyard before we moved, of growing sunflowers and vegetables in raised beds. And I started them from seed, funny enough. And about that time is when, I guess, well, we went to the beach in January on a quick vacation. On our way back, we saw a sign for pick your own daffodils. It was a Sunday afternoon. We were literally driving home, and we don't even do stuff like this normally, but we took a detour.
It was fate. It was fake.
It was. We took a detour and we're like, that sounds like fun. So there was a daffodil farm you pick, and there was grandmothers with their grandkids and couples. And we know, you know, like you picks on flower farms. And I just thought, this is great. We can totally do this at our farm. And this is amazing. And went home, got on Instagram. I think the first thing I probably searched, was on Instagram. We were on Instagram.
Yeah,
then.
We were on Instagram.
So that was, in 2016. And the first thing I searched was you pick flower farms. And shortly after, just flower farms, went into the deep hole on Instagram. And
it was off and running.
Oh my gosh, I can grow every flower.
Because we were supposed to be doing what we were supposed to be doing was moving to the farm. And we were going to grow some things for roots. For like Christmas greens. So we were going to plant like Leland cypress, magnolia, holly, winterberry, you know, the little bit lower, not full on flower farm. Then it went to, we saw the daffodil farm. Well, we could do that. We could have people come, you know, pick their own daffodils. And then he came back and started like finding, he found you.
Yeah.
Like I remember like the first day he found you on YouTube.
Or Facebook,
and then YouTube videos, because I remember watching the videos, you know, we were still redoing our house and farm and everything, and it was like wildfire, and it just, that's when the
that's
farm
That's kind of how it happens, isn't it, when you do right. the flower farming thing, it is just so easy to fall head over heels into it, right?
Right.
So you started the farm in 16 or 17?
2016, we started the farm, and Wesley started his Instagram account for our house renovations. So that's how Farm Shenanigans, our Instagram account, came to be. And as we would get, you know, add a new farm animal here or there, we would talk about that and talk about your decor styling choices and everything as we were kind of redoing the house. And with the farm, I was... That first year just grew for our retail stores. So I didn't sell to anybody else. It was just me harvesting flowers in the field and bringing the pickle buckets into our retail, high-end boutique retail store, pickle buckets on the floor, and customers went crazy and they just couldn't get enough and they kept buying them and buying them.
And that was the first time we really introduced cut flowers to the retail store.
Yeah.
We had still been plants up to that point.
And I guess my thinking was, well, I know we don't sell cut flowers like a traditional florist, and we always wanted to set ourselves apart. That's really, I think, what's helped our businesses succeed.
Yeah.
But I felt like, well, these flowers are different than what you can buy anywhere. And I didn't even know there were other flower farmers in the area. I thought I was the only one that had come across Lisa, you know, growing all these flowers in Virginia. And anyways, that's how.
And then y'all got on a TV show. What was that?
Yeah, we bought the farm, which was on HGTV, which is sort of similar to like House Hunters. But it's like a spinoff just for people buying farms. I don't think they do it anymore. I haven't seen any episodes.
Yeah, recently. It was just a one episode show, but it was an experience.
They did two seasons, and we were just on one episode, and they followed us around, and
we had to pretend.
Spoiler alert, it's all fake. But
yeah, we had already been living in our house for 6 months, but that was the stipulation.
Yeah.
It had to be a new purchase, but then they showed us other farms that we would never think of buying, but we had to pretend like there was a chance.
So, Daniel, then the pandemic happened. So tell me, I know for particularly, well, both of you, I know what happened in the flower business for that time period of before we all thought, what the heck are we going to do? Wes, I can't imagine having a retail store full of stuff.
Right.
That now all of a sudden nobody can come shop. So tell me about that.
Yeah. So of course, you know, everyone dreaded that. And that's the moment when you're like, okay, this is the situation. How am I going to handle it? Because you just automatically have to start. How am I going to chew this and handle this?
And it wasn't just that the stores closed. Well, I had high tunnels full of ranunculus and anemones and all the good stuff, my most expensive crops that year. But also, you know, we have about 30 employees between all the businesses, and then all of a sudden they aren't going to come to work. And
makes me sick. Thing.
Yeah, I know.
And I think to set the scene to exactly where we were, to go back to Daniel's point. So he started the farm in 16, and then 17, he was like, okay, I'm going to up it a little bit. So made that next step to up it. Right. But then that's when you started realizing like, oh, other florists, other event designers want this.
Yeah, that was the first pivot of Petal Pickers. Was I was focused on just growing flowers and taking them to our own retail store. But then I realized, and I think I came and told you, like, Wes, other people, like other businesses are trying to buy my flowers.
Yeah. And so we were like, okay. So between 17, when he realized that, and 2020, when the shutdown happened, 2020 was the first, like, really, really, really big leap. Like, you were like, I've built from 17 to 20, I built Roots, all of our customers were wanting the flowers. You've built this list of other retailers that want the flowers, event designers. So that was the big spring. Like, we have planned.
Everything was into this huge spring crop in 2020.
Yeah. That's where it kind of set the scene. And then the pandemic happened, the shutdowns happened, and we were immediately like,
uh-oh.
What are we going to do? The good thing is, for like furniture, home decor, yes, it's sitting there, but it doesn't expire. However, with cut flowers and houseplants, they do kind of have a shelf life. You know, I mean, houseplants continue to grow, but sitting in a retail store, and if no one's working, you know, someone's got to water them and that sort of thing.
So we decided really quick, within, I think it was like a 2-week period, that just around the clock, we said, we're going to figure out how to ship our flowers and to keep people at the brick and mortar stores, you know, our employees employed. We're going to figure out how to ship the home decor products and gift items. Yeah. You know, we're not going to ship the huge stuff, but we can do this and then use our Instagram accounts to, you know, that'll be our target audience. And hopefully people locally can still support us too. But
yeah. And so I had been dabbling in selling online from our 4 Rooms furniture store, literally out of the back room, which was the size of a closet, a 10 by 10 room. So we had been selling a little bit online for that store for, I think we started in 2019, the summer of 2019. So we had about, I don't know, 6 or 8 months under our belt of dabbling in the online sales or whatever. And we were like, had a basic understanding. And so when the shutdown happened, I was like, this is my only outlet. Like, I'm still going to be on Instagram. I can still decorate. I can still show products. So now how do we get it in the hands of the customers? And so that's when the Nested Fig, which is my online store that you were talking about, that's when it started. So that was the spinoff of it. And
it kind of took the elements from both of your retail stores and brought them together.
Right.
So, you know, you're shipping home decor, but also a little bit of gardening stuff. And
yeah.
Right.
And I used that opportunity. I was like, okay, we had been selling just to my Instagram following from our retail store, like I mentioned, 4 Rooms. And the website was 4 Rooms Greenville. And I felt like that was just kind of making us sound like a, like, if I'm wanting to reach an audience that's not in Greenville, South Carolina, and that you come across 4 Rooms Greenville, it just sounds like a small, you know, who is that sort of thing? So that's when I was like, this needs to be its own business that I can brand as its own thing. And that's how that became its own.
The Nested Fig.
Yeah. So that's how it became the Nested Fig. And so then Daniel and I were literally working around the clock.
We built a website.
Building our own websites individually.
I was building petalpickers.com and Wes was nestedfig.com. And I'm like, hey, I need some kind of coding for this. Like, have you come across that yet? You know?
Yeah.
And I was, the shipping programs and the apps that you can add to your website. And so we figured all that out. And I would say it's been pretty successful.
Absolutely. It's the best thing to happen.
You know, sometimes the best things come from really bad stuff, right? You know, I mean,
it goes back to, you have to have that uncomfortable feeling and then, you know, working on it and making it happen.
And you can't be afraid to fail. You just have to, you know, try to focus on how you're going to figure it out.
Right.
And it's one bite at a time. And okay, now I have the website. Okay. Now,
right.
How do we, where are we going to store all this? But you know, we had the knowledge from building our retail stores for 11 years prior. So we knew how to get inventory. We already had employees, you know, it's like it all worked out, but it's because we had been building for 11 years,
right.
You know, and now for 13 years, it's didn't happen overnight. Not any of it.
But, you know, would you not agree that there is just one thing that is through and through, and that is consistency? You got up and did it every day, right?
Right.
I mean, I think that's where people get discouraged. I mean, that's kind of what I'm hoping that these talks that I'm doing with folks that are, you know, whether they started as a flower farmer and it led them somewhere else, or flower farming is a part of what you're doing, like what you guys have built. That, I mean, it's not that we had, I mean, you already said you didn't have any money when you started, really. I mean, even the gifts you got, that's nothing compared to what some people, I mean, I read on social media, or people are saying, oh, you can't start a flower farm unless you have X, Y, Z and this and that. And I'm like, wow, I started with a wheelbarrow, some seeds and a shovel. Literally, does that sound like a dinosaur or what? But I did it and I made money. So I could buy more stuff, you know?
Right.
And I mean, I just want to encourage people that what we're talking about comes from being willing to be uncomfortable, to keep after and keep doing it. And I am a firm believer that the road to success is paved with failures. They're required.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Lisa. And it's never too late to start the business. Like, if you've been thinking about it, start today, or change or whatever. And if you're like, how am I going to get there? How am I going to, like you said, you can take $500, find what you can do with that and what you can sell. How can you make that $700? Then how can you make that $2,000? And you keep doing it, and you feel like in the moment you are never going to get there, but once you start the ball rolling, it gets there and you can make it happen.
You know, when I first started the Gardener's Workshop, the retail portion of our business in 2005, there was a local bird store, you know, where you go for wild bird stuff and everything. And it was an independent store. And I can remember one of the ladies that worked there lived on my street, and she would stop here often to pick up stuff. And I can remember her telling me the story of the lady that started that business like 30 years before. And she said, it's like you guys going to market and looking for the bargains. She said every week we would they would tally up how much they made, what they needed to pay their bills, and then what was left is what they could buy stock for the next week.
Right,
and that's what they did to build this, what turned into be an enormous franchise business for them. You know, I mean, people talk about Apple being starting in somebody's garage. Y'all, these are real stories. It's not that. You just have to be willing to do it. And I think the being vulnerable part is where people just think, oh, but I have this problem or that problem, and they didn't have that, or they have this, or, you know, she has that. Not at all. I mean, we could fill up their ears with the problems, right? But we just faced them and figured it out.
And you learn the most from your failures, because, I mean, we've had so many. So some examples, I guess, you know, I killed ranunculus for 2 years in a row, and I spent some good money on trying to grow ranunculus, maybe third time's a charm, but after killing it, I was determined to figure out how to grow it, and really focused in, you know, I've killed trays and trays of transplant stuff that I've grown from seed. We've had the deer come in and eat 1,000 sunflowers in one night. And believe it or not, I've seen a herd of 18 deer in my flower field at one time. And all that happens. So then, you know, okay, the deer ate my sunflowers. So we built a fence.
But at the time before that, we couldn't afford to build the fence around the flower farm. So it was like, okay, well, then I just can't grow sunflowers right now. Yeah. Like, don't spend the time focusing on the sunflowers if I'm not going to be able to keep them out. So what can I plant that we can recoup that money?
So that's what got me into dahlias, because deer don't eat dahlias.
Yeah.
And so that was, yeah, that's exactly. You take the situation and try to figure it out to something that works. What's one failure that we've had? Oh, at Roots. You know, we always would try to beat our competition. That we have an outdoor area at our plant store. And so we also have a Home Depot like 2 miles down the street. And we would always try to, like, Home Depot would get all these plants in early spring. And we're like, oh, we got to get our ferns in. We got to get our begonias in. And we would order everything in. Like, one year we did it April 1st.
Or the end of March.
We've
done it all.
Yeah. So then, well, you think you're in the clear, the weather looks good, and then all of a sudden a 29 degree night is showing up for April 16th and our frost date's like the 15th, and we have, $10,000 of annuals just sitting outside in our garden area. And so, like, what do? Well, we went and got a bunch of tarps, frost cloth, and like, we had our entire outdoor area tarped. I'm sure the neighborhood was like, what is going on? Trash bags, anything to cover it, you know, and some stuff didn't make it, but the most of it did. And we're always putting out fires like that.
But then you also learn, okay, was all of that worth it? Or was it not worth it? Was it worth it? Was it not worth it? So you know what now? A plant doesn't show up to about April 15th because I'm not going to live through that 2 weeks of stress and move it. By the time I pay employees to tarp and untarp, haul in, haul out, the plants look beat up by then. It's not even worth it. So you just figure out, like, okay, let's not do that.
Yep. How are we going to make this simpler on us and everybody else?
Right.
Well, I mean, I think it's sometimes you see other people doing it, like y'all saw Home Depot. I mean, that's what social media does to flower farmers. I just had a conversation yesterday on Clubhouse with our good friend Janice Harris of Harris Flower Farm in Canada, and we were interviewing her as a northern grower, and I said to her, so how do you watch all of us southerners with flowers and planting, and you're still weeks and weeks and weeks away? And that's what I wanted to talk to her about, because so many people that are inexperienced are doing what you were just talking about, right? Doing way early. Either they spend a ton of extra money. It's like, at the end of the day, did you make more than you spent? What is your gut feeling like? You know, I mean, it's like, I value things in gut juice. Right. I don't do anything that makes me crazy anymore. You know, I mean, I had my share of those things, but yeah, that's a really great point. And so, you know, we've talked about the fears and the wins and the failures. And so, you know, I call it fortitude. It's like, what feeds you? Well, I can already tell that Wesley's the driving force, because he was born with it. I mean, it's like me, I'm a cliff jumper. It's like, I don't think about the costs perhaps before I think, oh my gosh, that's a great idea, let's do it. And then my team says, we did it yesterday. Spent 2 hours talking about something. At the end, I'm like, all right, let's not do it then.
Right.
You know, I mean, we're the rainmakers, and but somebody else has to really figure out where the water's coming from.
Right. I would like to add one thing though, back to what you were saying about the Instagram or whatever, that I feel like I see from the outside that flower farmers do a lot. And going to social media and see what other people do is they want to grow things that just are not going to grow successfully for their area. You know, Daniel was like, we need to grow roses. And I was like, you are not growing roses. See, this is where I put my foot down.
That's like, where the horticulture degree came in good use, because normally when I ask you about growing plants, he says, I don't know.
Yeah. I'm like, you're never going to successfully grow a rose here in South Carolina with our humidity. It's never going to look better than what people can order in. When people want roses, they want this perfect rose. They want this. That is a game you are never going to win or whatever.
Right.
Yes. Out in, you know, Washington State, California. Or California, those places where they grow them successfully, they do look gorgeous on Instagram, but you're not going to do that here in South Carolina. It's just not going to work, sort of thing. So I think you can't get caught up on social media and what other people are doing.
It's so hard.
Yeah, it's so hard. It's so hard. And I always tell, I think Daniel has a more of an issue with what I'm going to say than I do, but you got to, no matter what business you're in, flower farming, garden shop, home decor, you have to figure out your menu. Always compare it mm-hmm. to a restaurant. Like, what is your menu? You can't be an Italian restaurant and you're selling sushi. But you know what? Sushi's still good. That just doesn't mean that you're just not the one to sell that. You have to like really narrow it down to your menu and do your menu really, really good. So that's what your customers are coming to you for.
And I think that's taken me a lot of time to figure out what is my menu and what does grow well here. And I think, you know, as a starting off, you know, as a newer flower farmer, you're going to grow all this stuff.
You
got to
dabble in
everything. Have to like kill stuff.
Experiment and cry.
Yeah.
And so I think, I mean, this is my 6th year growing this season and my 5th year selling cut flowers. And I don't think I had my big revelation until over this past winter when I had time to stop and think. And I said, okay, the business is really rolling, but I have to stop growing everything. And so I've kind of just narrowed it down and we'll continue. I still had some leftover seeds that I've germinated.
Of course, you had to try them.
It was sitting there, so I had to grow it. But I've really started focusing and narrowing down my selection You aren't going to know that year one unless you're just growing a single crop.
Yeah, you know? You have to cast, with starting any business,
a wide net.
Yeah, cast a wide net, but immediately start working on narrowing it down. And that's the process to get you more streamlined and get you running like a smooth, you know, smooth machine. Like at Roots, we started out doing home decor plants. I would do some weddings. I would do Christmas decorating.
Because you were hungry.
Oh, yeah. Right.
When you're hungry, you'll do anything. I mean, I did the crazy stuff too. But Daniel, I remember you saying, I don't remember if it was this last year or the year before when we were talking, that you were finding, you know, you're knocking some flowers out of the running because they don't ship well. That's become a big focus, right? And mm-hmm. there's just some things like these things that are behind me that you guys can see, bachelor buttons and agrostema. You wouldn't ship them, right? I mean,
nope.
They would look like mush when they got there. And so it's always, I mean, nobody, all you have to do is call my sister and ask her how many times I change my direction.
Right.
You know, it's got the big end goal, but there's all these little, rabbit holes, I guess, you can fall down, and you need to fall in them every now and then, but you gotta, to move really forward, I have had to put on blinders,
right.
and get help too.
We've always just been open to change. You have to be open to change, but we've always let our customers kind of guide us along the way, but not drive us. So like if one customer says, I have this huge wedding and I need yellow flowers and yellow is the Pantone color of the year and yellow, 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 I can't make my whole crop plan yellow. That would be very bad.
Right.
I've also always been told to grow flowers, if you're growing for event florists and weddings, to grow flowers that are going to make the bride feel pretty on her special day. So don't try to grow all these crazy things that are brown, that are whatever, they're always going to want white blush, right. light pink that are pretty. So
stick with your core or whatever. But yeah, you can't let, listen to your customers. Now, if you're hearing over and over, oh, we need some more yellow. Do you have anything yellow? You
hear
yellow, yellow, yellow. Then maybe you should add some yellow to your crop. But it's, you can't let them drive you, like what Daniel's saying, is just because one person says, oh, you need to be doing this. Because if you start listening to everybody, you, again, your menu gets too big. You're all over the place. You're doing this, you're doing that. And you lose focus of what your main core is.
It's true. And I do, I'm a firm believer in networking, and networking, it means more than one or two people.
Right.
Because you can definitely fall into something like that if you're, I mean, whether it's a customer or a cohort, you know, I mean, yeah, totally.
And it's one of those things, like, just because another flower farm or retail store or whatever in your area is doing something, doesn't mean that you then have to do it. Like, let them do that. Let them, like, find your path. Let them do their path. Stay in your lane. Doesn't mean, you know, if someone's growing roses, everyone has to grow roses. Someone's going to do it really good. Let them be the rose person or the rose people. There's going to be more than one. But, you know, but remember what you do best. And you, like you said, you got to put blinders on, and you learn to do that after a while, but it takes a long time to put those blinders on because you feel like you're missing out, and you feel
it's
like
it's an evolution.
Yeah.
And it's, there's many steps to that process, but
yeah.
And crop selection is a big one of those, isn't it, Daniel? It's like people say to me all the time, like, we're, you know, we're getting ready to have an open farm here, and people are going to say, well, why aren't you growing this or growing that? It's like, they're all great, but I don't need to grow all of them. It doesn't mean I will never grow them. It just means at this point in time, right? Like you said, when you couldn't keep the deer out, you learned what you couldn't grow because they didn't eat these other things. And then I'm sure you brought sunflowers back. I know I saw them on your social feed not long ago.
Yeah. The deer base is holding strong. So lots of sunflowers this year.
So things are always changing, and it doesn't mean it's going to be that way forever. And, so, you know, you've been sharing these tips just throughout our talk here. And, you know, the way that y'all did it is very much what I had written down here, is starting small, taking small bites, and trying to set yourself up for success. For instance, you guys doing your market shopping would be the way, like if you were a flower farmer, I'd say a way for a flower farmer to set themselves up for success is that if you don't have a cooler, don't grow tulips.
Right.
Just go to social media today, and I'm sure you can find 10 suffering growers that don't have anywhere to sell their tulips because they're first years and they don't have a cooler to keep them in. That's not setting yourself up for success.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's
that goes back to working with, you know, what you have. If you can't afford a cooler at the moment,
yep,
that is important to tulips, as we all know, then don't grow the tulips because you're not.
There's plenty of other stuff to grow. Right. Good grief. That's what I lived on, right? I mean, and
you
have
to start looking ahead though. And so last winter, I built two additional coolers. So the opposite,
right?
Because I knew what was coming down the line and I wanted tulips to be a big crop for our business. I didn't need the third cooler yet, but because I was building one, I thought I'm going to go in and build the other. And sure enough, this spring, all three were full.
And really? Like,
you know, how did I just think like, what made me build that third cooler? Like, I really didn't know, but I just felt like this is going to be a bigger thing and I'm going to need this in the future. It's easier to do it now than it will be to stop everything and start this project again later. So it's kind of, you know, you have your intuitions.
I was going to say intuition and experience. And, you know, we do learn as we go through this. And I mean, the forecast in the flower world is pretty good looking for the next, you know, I mean, I live in 5-year lumps.
Right.
And yeah, it's just getting better and better. And, you know, I just appreciate y'all taking the time. I know both of you, it's the week before the week of Mother's Day. So I know Daniel has better things to be doing. And I know you probably do too, Wes. But I just have so much admiration for the businesses that you guys have built. And for those of us on social media, you know, flowers are just such an amazing part of that. And, you know, I just love sharing with people. First off, for me, being the old woman in the group, you know, many of my girlfriends, I'm 61 now. When I started hitting in my early 50s, I thought, you know, I don't think I can do this till I'm 70. I love it, but it's pretty hard. And, you know, I'm just trying to like highlight some of the amazing paths that people have brought to flower farming or taken from there. And y'all were at the top of my list with these amazing businesses. So now I want you to share how people can connect with you all, how they can watch your shop and show, Wes, and how they can order your flowers, Daniel. Y'all, you just, everybody deserves to get a bouquet in the mail. Daniel has shipped me several bouquets and they are all breathtakingly beautiful. And you will not be sorry. So fill us in. How can people connect and buy from you?
All right, before we get to how you can connect with us, I have one last tip that I always share with business owners that I talk to. And that is, when you're thinking about your fears, going back to fears, don't focus on the fear of failing. What you really need to focus on is if you succeed. Because if you succeed, it is much, much harder than if you fail. Because it's you will hit a wall at some point in your adventure when you realize this is working. And not only is this working, now this is a marathon that I have to keep up with for the next however many years my career is going to be.
Which is everything you asked for.
Which is everything you asked for. But getting through that wall when you realize, you know, you start out with that mental underlying subconscious of, is this going to work? Am I making it? It doesn't feel like I'm making it. I'm never going to really make it. And then it slowly turns to like, oh, this is working. It's going to work. It is working. Then you wake up one day and you're like, oh my gosh, it's working. And I've got to keep this going. Like that was much harder for me to break through than thinking about the failing part of it. So you got to mentally prepare yourself to run the marathon for years and years and years.
I mean, and that's the talk everybody talks about being sustainable. Well, that sustainability can be you and to keep your brain power. I know for me, it's like keeping ahead of the monster is a lot of energy. And totally agree with that, Wesley. That's a great one.
So you can find me on Instagram at Farm Shenanigans. You can follow me here at our farm and I do decorating things and that sort of thing. And then for our online store, it's called The Nested Fig. And we do have an app that you can download and shop. And it's just, if you search The Nested Fig in any app store on your iPhone or Android phone or whatever, and you can find our store there and see what we sell, that we ship nationwide. And then Daniel, you can find him.
I'm at Petal Pickers on Instagram, or you can go to petalpickers.com is our retail website, and you can ship anyone that you love. Or we actually have a lot of flower farmers that'll buy my flowers that live up in the north. And they'll buy my early spring flowers just because they want to have flowers again while they still have snow on the ground.
That's awesome.
But you can order at petalpickers.com. And we have, as long as the flowers are blooming, we're shipping them. And we kind of do a bouquet each week. And it just depends on what's blooming out in the field. And you're going to get the best of what we have out there.
That is so awesome. Y'all are just such an inspiration in so many ways. And I appreciate you being here with us today. Friends, if you're enjoying this podcast, we always love it when you share it with your friends, give a review. Please connect with Daniel and Wes through their social apps. Social media. I'll actually put the links in the show notes below this podcast. And I will tell you that they have a miniature donkey. Is it a miniature or is it just a donkey?
It's a miniature Romeo.
And what's the big bird you have?
We have emus now.
Oh my gosh. Y'all, you just have to, for if no other reason, to see these guys and to hear Romeo just makes me smile. So friends, if you want to learn more about the work we're doing at the Gardener's Workshop, you can just head over to thegardenersworkshop.com. We're an online garden store, virtual learning center. We have online courses and schools. Want to build a business based on flowers? We are here for you. And, you know, thank you, Daniel, and thank you, Wes, for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for everything, Lisa. Appreciate it.
We appreciate you guys, too. So until we meet again, friends, ciao.